morning. Happy Friday. You've made it to Friday. Your Friday. Are you excited? My name is Melissa Carter. I'm your host for She Persisted. Thank you for joining me on your Friday. So this is going to be the weekend that you were preparing for something. So you were either going to prepare to have company come into town. So that means all the sheets have to be cleaned and put on the beds, organizing where people are going to sleep if they're coming to your house. You're going to have to clean the kitchen. You're going to have to find that space where you put everything that you don't want out. I know that no house is perfect from four corners to four corners, that there is some space in your home that is the dump space. Whether that be the garage, whether that be the guest room closet, there's some place where you put everything that you don't want on display when family comes. So that's what you'll be doing this weekend. And then I am actually going out of town. So those of us who are going somewhere for Thanksgiving are going to be packing this weekend. So Mr. Carter and I are going to head to Millie Pete's house in Nashville for Thanksgiving. Millie Pete, my mother, her affectionate nickname. She made the mistake of telling me that that was her nickname in college. And I was a teenager when she told me that story. And so probably from the age of 17 until now, and I'm 47, I have called her Millie Pete. And I call her Mom every so often. I just think it's so cute. She's a little Southern woman. She's like 5'5", stocky. Now she'll kick your ass. But she's 5'5", so she's Millie Pete just fits her. But I'm going to see Millie Pete, who's 89 this year. And we're going to go up there and spend some time with her and my sister and my brother. So that'll be fun. So I'll be packing this weekend and making sure that we take everything we need. The one good thing this year, as opposed to any other year, is I don't have diapers to deal with. So that is kind of nice, a nice luxury. A nice underwear is a lot cheaper than diapers are. So it'll just be a lot more stops along the way of mama, I need to pee. Something else I wanted to follow up on that I talked about here on the show, and that was hot fucking drinks at Starbucks. Now, if you missed that podcast, which you can always access at shepersistedshow.com or on iTunes, that's the easiest place. If you're already on iTunes, just look for us, like us, subscribe. But I talked about how I don't like Starbucks coffee. I don't like Starbucks coffee. I'll say it. I'm a proud Dunkin' Donuts drinker. But I will go and get tea at Starbucks because there's a lot of Starbucks and bookstores. And I'm a sucker for a bookstore. And I love to just spend time and walk around bookstores. So I will go get tea or hot chocolate at Starbucks when I'm at a bookstore. And I was at a bookstore the other day because I was meeting a friend for lunch, but I was early in the area. So I just walked around for about 45 minutes in a bookstore, thought I'll get a tea, take my time, got the tea, and I couldn't drink it. Like I wanted to sip on my tea while I was perusing the aisles, and it was just too hot to drink. It was almost too hot to carry. And so I got in the car, went to my lunch, and I just left the tea in the car. And I thought, well, I'll chance it and see if it's ready to drink when I get out of the lunch. The lunch was almost 2 hours long. I came back to the car, and just then it was ready to drink. So this tea, the hot water in this tea lasted 3 hours. And that's just ridiculous because when I order a drink, I'm kind of wanting that drink right now. I'm not wanting to just dream about drinking it for 3 hours before I get a chance to partake. So anyway, I'll go off on that tangent again. But I talked about that. I posted it on Facebook. I let people know my frustration on Facebook at Melissa Carter ATL. And they suggested a solution that I didn't even know was an option. And that is you can order the kids' temperature. So apparently there's a kids' temperature because I guess the powers that be realize that a kid, in their wisdom, when they get something, they want it now. And they get to drink it now. So there's a kid's temp that you can actually partake of what you're trying to drink now. And I'm stunned that there is that option, but I'm also confused on why there's that option. Why in the world does an adult not need to drink your coffee or tea in the moment? I want to drink it now. You know, this one thing about Keurig, you know, the Keurig machines, I have one of those at home. And I don't drink coffee as often. I've also talked about that. I don't use my Keurig like I used to. But when I was doing morning radio, that Keurig is where I got my coffee. I didn't wait to get to work. And nothing was open, of course, at 3 o'clock in the morning to get your coffee. And the Keurig was like, you talk about ready to drink then. Because with a Keurig, the problem is that sometimes it cools off way too fast. So if you're a slow drinker, then the Keurig may be too cool for you. It's perfect for me. But this kid's temp and regular temp. So I don't understand. I really, if somebody can explain to me why the water has to be so fucking hot and that, you know, you have to wait to drink the item that you're wanting in the moment. I don't understand. Because even if the justification, like I mentioned, I'm going off on this again, but it's frustrating. If the justification is for it to last until you get home, it doesn't take me 3 hours to get home. I mean, I'm not like going to Knoxville. If you're not from this area, Knoxville and Atlanta are about 3 hours apart. I'm not going to Knoxville to go home or to go get my coffee. So, I mean, literally, I could have gone to Knoxville, ordered that tea, and not be able to drink it till I got to Atlanta. This is ridiculous. So, kids' temperature. If you're like me and you are frustrated, then kids' temperature is your solution. So thank you to all the people who on Facebook let me know that that was an option. Somebody else mentioned about the lawsuit. You know, the McDonald's lawsuit, people made fun of. And I don't make fun of that anymore. So you remember, gosh, I can't remember what year it was. There's even been a documentary about it. I changed my tune when I saw the documentary about it. So people made fun of this older woman who spilled her coffee in her lap at a drive-thru at McDonald's and then sued McDonald's because of the temperature of the coffee. Now, apparently, the temperature of these drinks is actually lower than it used to be because of that lawsuit. But if you really look into that lawsuit and you thought it was a frivolous lawsuit, she was severely damaged by that spill. Like, it wasn't just a spill in the lap and then she got over it. Like, that was, she had permanent damage to an area that you don't want any damage done to for because of the coffee at McDonald's. If I'd spilled that tea in my privates in the bookstore, which would have been an odd configuration for me to do, but it would have seriously injured me. So anyway, so look up that lawsuit. But somebody made a joke about a lawsuit, but and those tops on those cups, I didn't mean to talk about this forever, but seriously, those tops on those cups don't stay very well. I mean, these are cheap, flimsy fucking paper cups that these drinks are coming in. And yes, I think that if you are going to make it that hot, then you need to have it secured. So, and the other thing that I couldn't think of when I first talked about this was the Yeti cup. I couldn't think of the word Yeti. So Yeti is also a product that is hard for me to use unless I want it cold. I would only put cold drinks in that because I don't need something hot for 16 hours. But yeah, you should serve it in a Yeti cup to keep it secure in stainless steel and a top that like suctions into the top like they do instead of this flimsy cheap shit that you give me with this dangerous water in the middle of it. Anyway, you know how I feel about it. Kid's temperature. There you go. Another thing I saw that I found really interesting, and it reminded me of my past, and you, if you are of a certain age, hopefully you will get the reference that I'm about to give you. But there was an article that I saw just yesterday talking about fashion and the future of fashion. And basically what it says is that we may someday be able to have shirts that don't need cleaning. Okay, now this is out of sciencefriday.com is the website. So they talked with scientists, like specifically textile scientists and chemists, and what they saw as the future of fashion. And they talked about the possibility of a t-shirt, for example, that never needs washing. So it's basically futuristic wearable items that somehow don't get dirty and we won't have to wash them. Now, a couple things. The fashion industry would never let that happen. I think that the older I get, the more I realize that everything is relative. Everything is dependent on another industry. So for instance, you know, I'm a kidney transplant recipient. I always think, well, too bad they don't use stem cell research, because stem cell research, I could grow my own kidney and place it in my body and never have to take anti-rejection medications, because I have to take medications, a lot of medications that are very expensive medications to keep the kidney functioning and my body not rejecting it. And stem cell research would allow me to not have to have these medications. I could just grow my own and my body would not reject it because it recognizes it as my DNA. But I realized that the technology is out there, but the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry are never going to allow stem cell research to evolve as it should, because it would save lives and it would make things so much easier and heal people. But we are so drug dependent in our culture right now that it would take a mammoth effort to be able to change that course. So, because it would be a loss of money for the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry. Me as one patient would be a huge loss if I didn't have to take these medicines anymore. And so anyway, it's sad, but it's the money game that's being played. And so the same with the fashion industry, and the dry cleaning industry and the laundry industry, and every product that's out there between the hardware and Tide and I just feel like all these powerful companies that are behind just fashion. Do you think they would actually let us purchase t-shirts that would never need washing, that you would have a handful of t-shirts in your closet that you could just wear and that's it? The fashion industry would hate it because they need you to buy more clothes and they need these things to wear out. I mean, I believe that that's why our clothes are not made as well, and they're made a little more cheaply so that we can be offered cheap things because we feel like we're getting a bargain if we buy cheap clothes. But in the end, what we're doing is just wasting a lot of material, and these clothes purposely wear out fast, and we feel it's okay to toss them. Because we can just buy another one, another t-shirt for $12 or whatever. Yes. But the other reason I think that the idea of having clothes that you'll never need washing is because this story came out when I was little. And this is where I talk about you being of a certain age. So if you are in your 40s or 50s, do you remember when you would watch Saturday morning cartoons, and especially CBS cartoons? So I can't remember what cartoons were on CBS, but you were watching cartoons on Saturday mornings, and in between the cartoons, especially at the top of the hour, there would be a little brief news report called In the News. And if it kind of trips your memory, here is the actual theme song. Now, this is not the fashion story that I remember, and I'll tell you about in a second, but this is a sample of In the News from the 70s. And I'm curious if you remember this.
In the news, new weapons and a tough choice. It's always hard to decide how best to keep up our country's military power. One of the hardest choices involving two new ways to deliver missiles is in the news.
So there was an In the News report of the very same thing that Science Friday just reported on. When I was a kid, I do remember a story, and I tried to Google it. I mean, because that, what I just played you, came from YouTube. I mean, YouTube is just beautiful in finding some of these old things. But they didn't have this report that I remember. But it was in the news, and it was about clothes that you only had to have one outfit. That by the year 2000, because somehow 2000 was like the pinnacle of technology, and in the 70s, they thought within 30 years that we would not only have flying cars, but we would also have outfits, not just t-shirts, but from head to toe. I want to say that they were imagining a one piece. Because I think probably in fashion there were like one piece, top bottoms back then, but that never did washing, that somehow they self-cleaned, and that you would save so much money because that's the only outfit you would ever need. And I remember them having, images, like sketch images of a family, like a mother, father, and a son and a daughter in these outfits. And if my memory serves correctly, I think they sketched it much in the way of... It looked a little like the $6 million man with his tracksuit and the stripes. But it was a story in the 70s. And it's just so funny how when I saw this, I thought, wait a second, they said this 40 years ago, how that was going to happen. And it never happened in 40 years. I guarantee you it's not going to happen in the next 40. For the very reason I told you. One, the fashion industry wouldn't let it happen. And two, I think we're just so used to changing, it's kind of cathartic to change your closet, to cleanse your closet. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with having some clothes and then deciding that you wanted some more clothes. And fashion trends and different colors in the fall and the winter and the spring and the summer and the whole thing. Because I have friends who went to Catholic school growing up, private schools, maybe not even just Catholic, but private schools, and they had to wear a uniform the whole time. And these women, as soon as they got out of high school, like, they were on the cutting edge of fashion because they never had a chance to be fashionable when they were young. Where it's so funny how I'm the complete opposite. When I was in high school, I really did care. Like, it was preppy time. And it was like pinks and greens and yellows and, I mean, navies. And it was just, I loved it. I loved the prep, you know, the prep handbook. I was all about it. I had the little snap, you know, wooden handle purse, and I had monograms everywhere on my purse, on my sweaters, on my shirts. I was it. Izod polo, hair rollers. Like I was the queen of the 80s. And then when I got into radio, as soon as I got out of college and a few years after I got out of college, and I worked morning radio, that's a hell of a grind to get up every morning at 3 o'clock in the morning. And so I kind of started losing that flair for, you know, caring about fashion. Not that I was the most fashionable, but at least I tried to keep up. And then I turned into the t-shirt, hoodie, jeans girl in my 20s and 30s. So it's just so funny how the women who I worked with that were the most dressy at work at a radio station when nobody saw you and you weren't required to dress up were usually the women who had been to the private schools and who wanted to dress up. So I just think that it shows you that even if somebody offered us one outfit, yes, you could save all kinds of money and just think you'd no dry cleaning bills and all this stuff. And it's just one outfit that you could wear for the rest of your life. I don't know if many people would actually want that. So anyway, in the news, if you remember that, I just love that show. I thought I learned so much from that little news program. All right, we'll have more She Persisted coming up next here on the Progressive Voices Network. I'm Melissa Carter.
Now, the top of the hour on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn presents the Green News Report.
The world is moving on, and so is the United States.
At UN climate talks in Bonn, Germany, the U.S. is a bit schizophrenic. New report shows Paris Agreement targets are not nearly enough. Senate approves fossil fuel lobbyist for top EPA air pollution position. Plus, Puerto Rico's governor estimates damages after Hurricane Maria are $95 billion.
All of those damages and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So what will make strong hurricanes more and more frequent? According to our government, the answer is none of your f***ing business. Stop asking so many questions.
Agreed. If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen. Well, after a main power line went out in Puerto Rico late last week, dropping the island from 40% power capacity back down to 18%, that has now been fixed. And now, 7 weeks after Hurricane Maria made landfall, still 50% of the island is without power.
Yes, the recovery is going extremely slowly, and Puerto Rican Governor Ricardo Rosselló on Monday estimated that rebuilding the island after two back-to-back hurricanes, both Irma and Maria, will cost $95 billion. That's an amount roughly equal to the island's entire annual gross domestic product. Rosselló asked Congress to cover the costs of the reconstruction price tag as, quote, an important step to demonstrate that the federal government will treat Puerto Ricans like any other American citizens.
Oh, sure. The federal government giving $95 billion to Puerto Rico. Good luck with that, Puerto Rico.
Meanwhile, in Texas, which is now rebuilding from Hurricane Harvey, a new MIT study calculates that climate change made Hurricane Harvey about 6 times more likely, and that the state's annual risk of similar extreme rainfall events in any given year is now 18% higher thanks to global warming.
Thanks, global warming.
Meanwhile, in the U.S. Senate, the majority Republicans voted strictly along party lines to confirm fossil fuel industry lawyer and lobbyist William Wareham for the number 2 spot at the EPA. Wareham has spent his...
Let me just break in there. That's the fossil fuel lobbyist who now is the number 2 guy at the Environmental Protection Agency.
That's right.
Got it.
Wareham has spent his career suing the EPA to roll back clean air standards that restrict mercury, silica, lead, and smog.
And we call that regulatory capture, do we not?
Yes, we do.
Well done, fossil fuel industry.
At the United Nations climate talks, now underway in Bonn, Germany, international negotiators are hammering out the mechanisms for 195 nations to reduce their emissions under the landmark Paris Climate Agreement. But a new report from the United United Nations Environment Program calculates that the current national commitments under that agreement are only about one-third of the reductions needed to avoid shooting past the agreed-upon target of no more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial temperatures. However, the report also concludes that accelerating the transition to solar and wind energy, replanting forests, and increasing the energy efficiency of our cars and buildings can help close that gap.
That sounds like a great idea. I suspect everyone in the world except the U.S. will be interested.
Well, last week, the United States became the only nation on the planet not included in that agreement. That's thanks to President Trump's intention to withdraw from the Paris Agreement in 2020. But a Trump administration delegation is attending the Bonn climate talks anyway.
And I hope they are being met with boos and hisses.
Yeah, pretty much. On Monday, they hosted an event to promote so-called U.S. clean coal and nuclear energy technology to developing countries as a way to cut their emissions. And, of course, they were interrupted by a climate action youth protest.
So we claim to be an American, but we see right through your greed. It's killing all across the world for that coal mining, and we proudly stand up.
And a shadow delegation is also representing the U.S. in Bonn, a coalition of states, cities, and businesses seeking to highlight positive U.S. climate efforts and strike their own deals on the subnational level.
Are they better singers?
I hope so. But their schizophrenic parallel U.S. presence is creating some confusion for other countries, according to the New York Times, who aren't quite sure who to trust. Former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who is leading the state action coalition, on Monday criticized the Trump administration and noted that, thanks to the states, the U.S. is already halfway to meeting the Obama administration's pledge to cut U.S. emissions.
It is important for the world to know the American government may have pulled out of the Paris Agreement, but the American people are committed to its goals, and there is nothing Washington can do to stop us.
Well, that's good to hear, but Washington is going to keep trying to roll the clock backwards. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide, please, on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Please help Progressive Voices support the Green News Report by stopping by bradblog.com/donate.
Whether you're listening to me, Mark Levine, each Monday and Wednesday,
or me, Leslie Marshall, each Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday,
you can hear us 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Voices Network.
Here's a sample of what you'll hear. Congressman Ted Lieu, a Democrat from California, is a member of the House Foreign Affairs and House Judiciary Committees. You are one of the lawmakers, along with other veterans, who are urging our own president to halt his heated words with regard to North Korea. Tell us about this, and please tell us why, sir.
We ask the president to stop making provocative statements against North Korea. Reason I did that is because it's very clear we have no good military options against North Korea. When I served on active duty, I was at Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. I was under U.S. Pacific Air Forces. We always did a series of different military exercises, much of it directed against North Korea. And the problem is we can't contain escalation. We don't know how the North Korean regime would react to military force. And if they go berserk and go crazy, a lot of people are going to die, including hundreds of thousands of Americans.
There was a Pentagon report on what a war with that isolated nation would entail. In addition to what you've just said, is there anything else that the Pentagon report found that people listening should be aware of?
Representative Ruben Gallego and I wrote a letter to the Pentagon asking them to explain to the American public what a war would look like. And they gave us a letter that was very blunt. I think their Joint Chiefs were actually trying to send a message. So first thing they said is we would need a ground invasion. That means we can't just launch 59 cruise missiles like we did in Syria and be done with the issue. This would be a long, protracted, bloody war with a lot of ground forces going into North Korea. And we have so little intelligence on the regime that we don't know where all their nuclear weapons are, nor where they are all located. And they also hide them. So we're going to have to try to find those nuclear weapons and secure them or destroy them. And if our ground forces can't do that before they can retaliate, then we're in a lot of trouble because they can detonate a nuclear weapon and kill a lot of Americans and South Koreans.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that briefly, Congressman. We're over here. The people of South Korea are the closest target. And in a sense, anything that is said by this president or any action that we have with North Korea affect one of our strongest allies, especially in that region, South Korea, and the South Korean people themselves.
The president of South Korea, President Moon, has repeatedly stated that there will be no military force without the pre-approval of South Korea. So the U.S. tries to conduct military operations in North Korea and the South Koreans are not with us, that just makes it 10 times harder. And keep in mind, in the First Korean War, China and Russia supported North Korea. So if they were to do that again in a Second Korean War, then there's no reason to believe that the U.S. can even win that war.
There are a lot of Americans who don't know as much about North Korea, but arguably the people there are brainwashed, and I believe that this madman who leads North Korea would send his peoples to slaughter simply to win a point, and that scares me also for the people of North Korea, because they don't really understand the truth of the world that they're living in and the world that surrounds them outside of those borders.
That is correct. The North Korean regime has done a very good job of brainwashing much of their population. But I have to tell you, their foreign policy experts and intelligence experts, they assess the North Korean leader is not suicidal, that he is rational in the sense that he'll do what he can to preserve his regime, which means that he's unlikely to, in fact, launch a nuclear weapon at the United States, because he knows if he does that, he'll be annihilated. The question is, can we deter him? Can we deter him the same way we would deter China or Russia, which has nuclear weapons? And a lot of how you view North Korea depends on your answer to that question.
Again, that's Mark Levine every Monday and Wednesday.
And Leslie Marshall each Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday.
3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Voices Network.
Did you know that the number one fear of Americans is public speaking? And you may share in that fear. And you may have done the research to see programs that are supposed to help you out, but they require you to go an entire weekend with a bunch of people that you're intimidated to get in front of and spend a lot of money. Well, guess what? You can do my online course called Speak Your Spirit. I designed it especially for shy people, and it only costs you $50. That's it. SpeakYourSpirit.com. Start sharing what you want to say. SpeakYourSpirit.com. Welcome back to She Persisted. I am your host, Melissa Carter. Now, if you have ever dealt with guys, which I'm sure you have, collectively, in a group of guys, there's always that one guy who tries to make sure that the maturity level is always low. So you can have these men, no matter how old they are, they try their best to be mature. They're trying to be businesslike, but there's always one of them that tries to throw everybody off. It's like he's the guy that's trying to call bullshit on the fact that these guys are trying to be on the up and up, and he wants to remind everybody we are really just 12 years old. Okay? Always. With all this sexual harassment that's been going on lately, how are guys handling it? Well, here's a group of people from the Justice League, which is opening this weekend, doing press junkets throughout the week to promote the movie, and you'll find that Ben Affleck is that guy.
And if you could pick any character to join the Justice League or a sequel, who would it be and why?
Black Canary, we could use more women.
Yeah, Supergirl, for that same reason, and it's nice to have a bit of family for Superman.
The fishnets, right?
And
the,
is that what I mean? Yeah, okay.
What would you get up to if you had, like, Supergirl or joining the team?
I think it would just create a different dynamic, you know?
You following the news at all?
There could be someone in the Green Lantern Corps who could be a woman.
Mm-hmm. True.
There's no reason why a woman can't get the ring.
Woman with a fish head.
This is about to spark major controversy. Watch it happen. Yeah.
We should have 8 women. The whole Green Lantern Corps should be women.
That would be awesome.
Do you see how men are handling the situation? Like, everybody else was trying to be cool. Like, they were, once a woman was being introduced, as, you know, to be added to the Justice League, obviously Wonder Woman is in the Justice League, but, you know, adding more women in it, and everybody else was trying to, yeah, that's right, Green Lantern, you know, they were trying to be serious about it. And Ben Affleck's the one that was trying to derail everybody. You see that? Men in groups cannot handle mature conversation. I shall repeat that, and I will hold strong to that. Men in groups cannot handle mature conversation. There's always somebody who is going to try to mess it up, either because he's trying to show out. I don't know if Ben was trying to show out because he was a female reporter, or he was just trying to, I don't know, be the alpha dog. But there's in a group, men can't handle mature conversation. They cannot do it. Women obviously can do it. Women don't. When there's a group of women, it is not an automatic that something sexual will be revealed or said. Could be, but it's not going to be in the same vein as when guys do it. Case in point, that one of the struggles with the sexual harassment as we move forward and all those allegations is, yes, I think men individually, absolutely on our side, they are embarrassed by the actions of other guys. There are guys that hate guys like Ben Affleck. There are guys that cannot stand guys like that. It stresses them out to be around guys like that. And so they usually avoid them. But most of the time, guys just, as a group, they topple up. It's like dominoes. It's a domino effect. It's a shame. Ugh, Ben. I mean, and Ben is one of the guys that, hadn't he been accused of groping people? Hadn't he been accused of copping a feel? He's just that guy. Like, I've never been a fan. Even before all that, he just seems like, I remember in Good Will Hunting, I just always liked Matt Damon better than Ben Affleck. I don't know. So, and now I know he's that guy. That's the reason. Anyway, moving on to something a little happier. Here is a couple that I think you are going to see on television sometime soon, and probably maybe on TLC, I'm assuming. And the reason I say that is because they are the happy parents of new children. Talking about a couple in Maryland who already have three sons, okay? They have a boy who's six, and then they just had identical twins. Those twins are 2 years old. And now they're about to have triplets, three daughters. Their names are Nia and Robert Tolbert. And here's Robert talking about how he reacted to the news.
Initially, people were literally like mouth on the floor, just in shock that it could happen again. And I saw how long it was, and I was like, why is this strip so long? And then I looked at it, and it said baby A, baby B, and baby C. And that's when I passed out.
I love being a mom. I can't explain, like, the feeling of someone yelling at you all day, throwing toys at you, throwing up on you. But at the end of the day, like, you are there.
Well, I'm glad she likes it so much. But the reason I said I think they'll be on television is because usually parents who have children like this, and I didn't see in the story anything about fertility, but just saying, I mean, usually if you have twins and then triplets, that's not a natural state of of reproduction. They're going to have their own show. How else are they going to pay for the kids? So, I mean, that's six kids. And it's doable. There's plenty of couples who have had many children and didn't have to have a reality television show because of it. But I don't know. We'll see if they do. Again, their names are Nia and Robert Tolbert. So I don't know if Nia and Robert plus six, half a dozen with Nia and Robert, and whatever name of the show is. Just saying that they may have their own reality show. Another thing that I want to know from you, and I may post this on my Facebook page, again, Melissa Carter ATL. What is the random thing that has scared the hell out of you? Because it happened to me. The other night, I did not have my son, and I was just watching television. So on the nights I don't have him, I get a chance to catch up on everything that's on my DVR. And I, on my DVR, I'm an Outlander fan, and I'm an Orville fan, and those are my shows right now. And so I was catching up on those shows. So anyway, I'm laying on the couch watching television, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, I hear this.
El Sonidito by Hatchet Zero's band. Sure.
Well, that wasn't exactly what she said. I just grabbed that off the web. But it just so that you can hear Google's voice. If you don't have, okay, Google, hey, Google. I don't even know what the hell the thing's called. It's just from Google. And I got it because my mother has it. So when we went to see my mother last year, was it last year for the holidays? But it was at some point within the last year that my son and I went to go see his grandmother, and she had this thing. So my mother is slowly losing her vision. And so this was an easy way to do a voice prompt for things she wanted, especially if she wanted to listen to certain music. And so my son was so fascinated by Google that he learned to say, hey, Google, which was very cute because it's more like, hey, Goo Goo. And he loved, he made Google spell things for him. So I thought, you know, that's a pretty cool tool that he can use in order to make sounds of things like animals and trains like he wants and to spell things. So including his own name, which he now knows how to do. And so I bought Google for my house. Well, in order to keep him from playing with it all the time, I would hide it behind the couch. And so as I was watching television, I don't know why Google decided that that was the moment that she was going to scare the hell out of me. But she responded to something like, I can't, you know, serve that function at the moment. I have no idea what you're talking about. Something to that effect. She heard something, I guess, on the TV that she thought was an instruction. And she decided to respond. And I... It made me jump off the couch because all of a sudden I hear this woman's voice from behind the couch. And I laughed at myself thinking that if somebody could have filmed me in that moment, that would have been hilarious to see because that just threw me completely. And it reminded me of another time that I got scared by something of Mr. Carter's, and it was some toy that was in the back seat. And this has been a while ago. So this has been when these baby toys that he used to have, and somehow we had one in the back seat on the floorboard, and I don't know whether I hit a bump on the road, but these things always happen after dark, by the way. I'm always doing something in the dark when these things happen, so maybe there's something more to it, and somebody's trying to put the energy into these objects. But this children's toy in the back seat of the car while I was driving one time almost made me run off the road because I'm driving by myself and I'm in silence. And then all of a sudden one of his toys decides to speak and start singing or do something. And I didn't know it was in the car. And oh, I am lucky that I kept my cool and didn't like turn the wheel into a pole at that point. So yeah. So what are the random things that have scared the hell out of you? Huh. So coming up next is my can of crazy. And when trying to get away with a crime, keep track of how many of these you have. What am I talking about? Gonna tell you coming up. After this, on the Progressive Voices Network, I'm your host, Melissa Carter.
Try and get up every morning, day after day, and work for a living. Let's see him try that. Then we'll see who's the real tough guy. The working man is a tough guy.
With me, Joe Wilson, a wealth management advisor with a big money management house.
Mo' money, yo' money, Joe money.
We're happy to get the kind of money that jingles, but we'd rather get the kind that folds.
Not your grandpa's financial show.
What's going on, my money mavens and moolah misfits? It's me, your money guy, Joe Wilson of the Joe Knows Money Show, reporting live on Progressive Voices Network, delivering you 4 minutes of money news you can use. Trending this week in money news, a quarter of Americans cannot fix their teeth, according to the Federal Reserve's recent report on the well-being of U.S. households. That leads me to my next topic, 7 ways to save on dental care. Tip number one, commit to preventive care. If you do not have dental coverage, paying out of pocket for cleanings can save you money down the line. Barring that, make sure you're still brushing and flossing carefully. The cheapest cavity is one you'll never get. Tip number two, look for discounts. Brighter.com is the Groupon of dental care. It allows you to search for dentists in your area. It provides photos, summaries, and a rating system that links to Yelp. Best of all, Brighter offers substantial discounts on procedures and let you know how much they'll cost in advance. Tip number three, look for financing. Some dentists offer low or no interest financing plans. Some let patients create a budget plan and pay over 15 to 20 months instead of covering care all at once. Tip number four, get a treatment plan in writing. Ask for a treatment plan in writing with an itemized list of costs and talk through these costs with your dentist or orthodontist to see if there might be a less expensive option. You can look up fair pricing for procedures in your area using Fair Health's free dental cost lookup tool. Tip number five, visit a dental school. If you live near a dental school, find out if it offers free or inexpensive cleanings to the public. Students perform the work under the supervision of licensed dentists. Tip number six, use flexible spending dollars. If your employer offers a flexible spending account, you can fund the account with pre-tax dollars to pay for out-of-pocket medical costs like dental work. However, you need to predict your costs for the year in advance so that you don't overfund the account and wind up losing unused money unless your employer offers a grace period or carryover option. Tip number seven, join a dental savings plan. For many seniors, these non-insurance membership programs can fill the dental gap in Medicare coverage. With a low-cost dental savings plan, you'll save anywhere from 10% to 60% off the regular cost of procedures. You can learn more about dental savings plans at consumerhealthalliance.org. Now it's time for Joe's Money Trap of the Day. While most dentists are ethical, it's smart to remember that a degree on the wall isn't a guarantee of honesty. Also, the Coalition Against Insurance Fraud advises parents to ask to remain in the treatment room while a child is in the dental chair. That way you can make sure that your child is safe and only the expected treatments are done. Here's Joe's Money Grab of the Day. Thousands of uninsured Americans are traveling to Mexico every day for dental care they otherwise couldn't afford. Molar City provides dental care to uninsured Americans at a savings of up to 70% off procedures. A ceramic crown costs $340 and dentures start at $250. Most dentists in the town speak English and many receive training in the United States. And now it's time for Joe's quote of the day. When we talk about the healthcare crisis in America, we got to also be talking about the dental crisis and how to address it. That is a quote by Senator Bernie Sanders. You are listening to the Joe Knows Money Show on Progressive Voices Network. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/Joe Knows Money to hear this and other 4-Minute Money News You Can Use segments.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1747. That was the day that a crowd of Boston workers took British officers as hostages and held them for 3 days. The workers were outraged that fellow Bostonians had been pressed into service on British Navy ships against their will. Impressing ship crews was one of the ways the British manned their ships when there were not enough willing crew members. The seaport at Boston had become so notorious for this kind of worker kidnapping that other merchant vessels had begun to avoid the area for fear that their crews might be taken by the British Navy. Bostonians became increasingly vocal against the practice and worried about its impact on the local economy. In 1745, the local selectmen petitioned for, quote, immediate relief from impressment. They wrote that it was a matter that, quote, nearly affects the liberties of the people and is a great insult upon this government. 2 years later, Commodore Charles Knowles sailed into Boston on his way to the West Indies. While he resupplied and refit his ships, some of his crew members escaped from service. To make up his diminished crew, on November 16th, Knowles ordered local workers to be rounded up as replacements. Fed up, Bostonians detained members of the British fleet, including one of Knowles' lieutenants. The Massachusetts governor, William Shirley, was able to persuade Knowles not to retaliate. He helped to facilitate an exchange, the impressed Bostonians, for the British hostages. That January, a young Samuel Adams founded the newspaper The Independent Advertiser, published to defend the rights and liberties of mankind. The paper commended the mob for standing up to impressment. Samuel Adams would go on to become a leader in the American Revolution. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
This is the Top of the Hour from the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn. Instead of commercials, you've got progressive news and interviews right here at the Top of the Hour.
Hello, Progressive Voices TuneIn listeners. I'm Casey Hobbs.
And I'm Shane Mason, and we're the hosts of Nurse Talk Radio.
Here's what we're talking about this week.
Well, that music can only mean one thing. It's time for Healthcare in America with Donna Smith. Donna, welcome.
Why, thank you. It's great to be on Nurse Talk again.
So, Donna, what's going on specific to healthcare in this horrible tax proposal?
Oh, my gosh. You know, you said it so well when you said, you know, just when you thought they were going to give up on dismantling healthcare, through the ACA at least, they slipped something in the tax bill. And this time we have a couple of things, in the, at least on the House side, that we don't know if they will survive through the Senate process and then on to Trump. But in their dreams, they would like to. One of the things is take away the medical deduction that so many people who incur huge medical expenses have been able to use for many, many years so that they can at least offset some of the expense that they've had through the year. If that goes away, that really is going to hurt a lot of, and mostly middle-income people, of course, contrary to what they'd like us to believe, that this is such a great deal for the middle class. You know, for instance, my husband and I, if we lose that medical expense deduction, it's a huge problem.
And is anybody even hearing about that?
I think they've heard, they've spoken about it a couple of times on some of the news programs and so forth. But it turns out the Republicans at this point, they almost are just immune to having any real accountability for what's going on, because the next crisis of the moment comes along and it seems like folks get distracted. And it would be hard to see that as coincidental.
Well, I really haven't heard anything about this tax bill that does make it better for the middle class. And I keep hearing that. But everything I hear factually says no, it would not be.
Well, exactly. And the other thing in healthcare that's very concerning is they've talked about, and the CBO has now scored this, they've talked about they're going after the subsidies again, that through the Affordable Care Act that low-income people use to help pay their premiums, which has made it affordable for so many more people to get insurance than have ever had insurance before in this country. And so they've asked the CBO to score, which they did. How much would it save in the federal budget if we were to do away with the subsidies for premiums under the Affordable Care Act? And it's been determined that would save many billions of dollars. But what was not said in the stories that were released about that is, what does that equate to, and how many people actually no longer having insurance coverage because they won't be able to afford a premium that doesn't have any subsidy attached to it? So this is just a really bad, you know, it's a really bad way to carry out health policy, is to do it through a tax bill. It seems dishonest. It seems destined to be something that people will be surprised by, precisely because of what you just said, Patty, that people are being told this is such a great deal for the middle class, while at the same time the real provisions of the bill have some very, very bad things in it.
Well, they couldn't get the health care bill passed, so instead they're going to try to do some of that through this new tax bill. So
exactly.
What are the Democrats doing to push back?
Well, of course, they're resisting this particular bill. They also put forward their own budget plan, the people's budget. At least the Congressional Progressive Caucus has done that. And certainly the Republicans rejected that out of hand and really, really did not want that at all. So they're not likely to be successful with that. But there's also so many other measures that we can tell folks about. We've talked about the Inclusive Prosperity Act before on this show, the Robin Hood tax, and that would be such a wonderful way for this government to raise revenue without hurting anyone, and raising revenue instead of adding to the deficit, which, by the way, the Republican tax plan adds more than $1 trillion to the federal deficit. So this isn't at all about cutting the federal deficit and being good stewards of the country's money. This is more about giving tax breaks to the wealthy and corporations, and again, but telling the middle class that, gosh, that good things are going to trickle down to you eventually. And we saw how that worked in the past. So the Dems are being as loud and as resistant as they can be. And, you know, we were pretty successful in resisting the Republicans on the health care measure. So it's a matter of educating the public more and more, and like we're doing today, and saying, watch for this tax bill. Don't be fooled. Get as busy about calling your representatives and your senators as you were about the health care bill, and let them know how offensive that is to all of us. It's not the way we need to go.
Check out our show at nursetalksite.com and listen every Saturday and Sunday right here on Progressive Voices.
You've been listening to Top of the Hour on the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn. Commercial-free interviews and exclusive progressive news and information at the top of the hour.
Ever really think about what ideas can do? Well, then you realize the size of the thinker does not determine or even limit the size of the idea. Well, that's what my children's book is all about. It's called Whale of an Idea. And if you need a gift for a baby shower or a birthday, I would love for you to consider it. Whale of an Idea, available now online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Normal people, stupid things. Today's entry comes out of Australia, where two drunk guys tried to sell drugs to a random stranger at a convenience store. And when the guy said no, they started beating him up. Eventually, they ran off, and to make sure that no one could identify them, they took their shirts off and wrapped them around their heads. Which worked okay for one of them, but not so well for the other because he somehow forgot that he had his own last name tattooed across his back. Much like a football jersey, I guess. Which is how cops identified him when they found the guys at a nearby bar. So congratulations to the brainiac criminal. At least now you're never going to forget your name, and nobody else will, and you made it into my can of crazy. I often contend that it is the most unpopular, seemingly unpopular people in a group that will bust that door down so that everybody else can walk through it. Especially if there's a revolution, if there's a change to be made. I've said that in the LGBT community. In the lesbian community itself, you know, it's usually the hardest woman, you know, not just hard as in muscles, but hard as in mind and spirit and just, you know, somebody that has seen a lot and just has to be that way in order to push through. And then the rest of us can walk through. For the women's movement and for any of these sexual harassment allegations and equal pay and all these things that we're fighting for, it has taken, you know, some of the hardest women to kind of push through. And you know, we pride ourselves as women on sometimes being glamorous and feminine and beautiful and all these things that exude nurturing and caring. And I think we criticize women who are harsh a lot of times, you know, basically women who are bitches, you know, we'll use that word. I don't use that word in a negative context necessarily, because I think sometimes that means you're doing something right if people think you're a bitch, to be honest with you. So if you're a soccer fan, Hope Solo may be somebody that you either like or don't like. And she is a soccer superstar, part of the Olympic gold medal team, was in the World Cup for the U.S. women's team. So a great, phenomenal soccer or football player. But she is somebody who will speak her mind. And she's gotten in trouble for that. Popular or not, she was suspended from the U.S. soccer national team after she made a remark after losing in the Rio Olympics about how the opposite team were cowards. And again, she got suspended for that. She has also been one of only four players on her team that have filed a gender pay discrimination lawsuit against their company. Not the whole team, just her and a few others. And now she has come out speaking of sexual harassment and talked about how a man by the name of Sepp Blatter, who is the former head of FIFA, she said groped her at an award ceremony back in 2013. So Hope Solo has always been outspoken. And like I said, sometimes it takes women like Hope to get things done. She recently spoke at Fortune Magazine's Most Powerful Women Next Gen Summit. And I'm going to play the entire interview. It's about 5 minutes long, but it's an interview while she was on stage, and it regards sexual harassment and the equal pay. And I just want her to speak in her own words. And I apologize because I do not know the name of the woman who is interviewing her. I probably should if I was in the sports broadcasting world. I am not. So I apologize for not knowing who this woman is that's interviewing her. But this is Hope Solo, again, at the Fortune Magazine's Most Powerful Women Next Gen Summit.
I have to say, just working in the sports industry for a long time, covering all sports, I noticed a little bit of a similarity, I think, with Harvey Weinstein in this way, which is, I'm going to be honest, a lot of people thought this about Sepp Blatter. There were always these kind of, just, it was a reputation that he had, not just because in 2004 he said that the women should wear tighter uniforms to try to attract a bigger audience. You heard Lee Gallagher say their World Cup win was the most watched soccer game in the United States ever, male, female. So I don't think they need uniforms that are gonna be tighter. But there was that sort of thing where everyone knew that he was just kind of disgusting and a bad guy. I mean, how much did you guys talk about this amongst your own peers?
I mean, I'll just go back to what I've been saying this whole time. He's not the only one. I mean, it's just part of human culture. It's what we've taught boys growing up. It's what we've accepted as women as part of the normalities in the workplace. And, you know, I'm guilty as much as anybody else for not doing something sooner. So it's not just the Sepp Blatters of the world. Yes, we heard stories about him, but there are so many other executives that work for FIFA, for US soccer, coaches, trainers, as I said, and even teammates. So we all have to have more of an awareness on our own actions and behaviors. And like I said, you know, it's not just men. Yes, it happens for the most time with men, powerful men, yes. But sexual harassment has been normalized in our society. And I've seen it in the locker room, and I've seen young players be very uncomfortable about our own locker room environment, which is not conducive to respecting the female anatomy. It becomes a locker room similar to a men's locker room in a women's locker room. So we have to be cognizant of that as well. We're not innocent either. So like I said, yes, it happened with Sepp Blatter, but it is all across the board.
I mean, I think we're going to open this up to questions in just a moment, so have them ready. But I think most people would want to say, I mean, how does this change? I know that is a massive question that might not even be able to be answered on this stage. But you've been in the U.S. women's national team system for, what, 17 years, as you said, and you know the ins and outs. What is a step they can take? What are a couple steps to try to eradicate some of this?
Well, I mean, I think we all know that creating dialogue is the first step. And you know, we've been pushing for equality and equal pay in women's football. We actually have a lawsuit against our employer. Myself and four other teammates, we filed going on 2 years ago with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And that started with just dialogue. It started with us saying, look, we're the best team in the world. We've been the most successful team for the United States Soccer Federation. We brought in $20 million for the Federation in 2016, and the men lost $5 million for the Federation in 2016, yet we're getting paid 25 cents to the dollar. So this isn't just about, you know, the overall concept of equality. It's also based off of merit. We're bringing in $20 million, and they have a negative loss of $5 million. And then you fast forward to just this year, 2017, ticket sales alone, the women are supposed to bring in $5 million, ticket sales alone, and the men are projected to have a negative loss of $1 million. So this started with just conversation. And then suddenly we got the fans behind us, we got the media behind us, we got congressmen and women behind us, we got former President Barack Obama behind us, we got Hillary Clinton behind us. All of a sudden, we had so much support from men and women across the globe. And we're still waiting to see what happens with our lawsuit. Obviously, the court system takes some time. But like I said, it's been close to 2 years, and we're hoping for a ruling any day now, perhaps a settlement. I don't intend to settle for anything short of what is equal, because for me, when you file for equal pay, you don't want to settle for less, because it's law. This is American law. This law was passed in 60 years ago, in 1962 or 1963, by John F. Kennedy, and yet we're still pushing to have equal pay. It was passed 60 years ago, but who's going to enforce it? We have to enforce it ourselves. And that's what I've learned, is people don't want to give up power. You know, you can't just ask nicely for somebody to give up power, whether that's the U.S. Soccer Federation or FIFA or even, you know, the men wanting the women to get paid equally. Nobody wants to give that up. So I always say you have to take it. And sometimes it's an ugly fight. It's not asking to play nice. It's not being agreeable. You have to take what is rightfully yours.
I believe that women who speak up are doing so because they're fed up. I think that we still have to be in a position of enduring something before we say anything. Like, we still need to be pushed to do something, to say something. And that's why I'm glad that all this sexual harassment is just blowing up in so many people's faces. Like, I'm not sick of seeing these stories. I'm glad that this is just continuing to go and go and go and go, because so many people have been doing it as just a part of their life, as part of their business for so long, and it was just the norm. And I just think it's a dangerous space to be in, where we as women can't just observe something as wrong and speak up and say, okay, that's not fair, that's wrong, without having to endure it for so long before it happens. And that's why I say that women like Hope and women who are willing to speak out and speak their voice and get angry about something and are not afraid to be considered a bitch in doing so. I think once you stop caring about what somebody says about you, then you have the freedom to be who you are. and especially as women. And it's because men, you know, they have their own set of pressures and traditional pressures that they have been given. But in those pressures, it's almost like they're pressured to speak out and they're pressured to be aggressive and they're pressured to try things and make mistakes and go and keep doing, keep asking until you get what you want, where women are not trained to do that. I'm glad that all this is happening so that we as women might be able to evolve to the point where we can really use our minds as well as our hearts. We don't have to always be emotionally based. It doesn't always have to come from a place of being frustrated to get things done or to make change. And look at there, I've run out of time. I could keep going, but I won't. I hope you have a fantastic weekend. And if you're off for Thanksgiving, have a great holiday. But be sure every day do something for yourself. And I will see you Monday morning. Bye-bye.